All right, Gone Rogue podcast episode 69. I actually don't think it's episode 69, but I'm going to start opening every episode with
every episode
is episode 69. So one of the reasons that we are non-monogamous is that we don't believe that desire can be sustained as effectively with just two people. And the topic of today's conversation is dead bedrooms, which is like my favorite way to illustrate why I don't think that monogamy long-term is the best way. And it's sure it can work. And I think some people do it really well. I definitely think that being non-monogamous allows us to kind of fuel desire, and it's almost like, because we have so much autonomy in our lives, like we're really in charge of our own desire and our own, you know, taking care of ourselves and our own happiness. And I think that then feeds into the relationship. Whereas I think what I watch in people who do monogamy, and I won't say just monogamy as like a broad term, it's like people who don't do monogamy well, I think become codependent on each other and rely on each other to make the desire thing just appear out of nowhere and be spontaneous and be consistent through all the ups and downs of life. And so the dead bedroom concept has like really intrigued me from the beginning. And whenever I open up my Reddit, I always find a dead bedroom post. So I've literally just opened up my Reddit because I just want to see, it's like the fourth post down is a dead bedroom post talking about a dead bedroom, HPV, 12K credit card bills, and I'm not even allowed to kiss her. That's the title. Okay, Greg Wolf, thoughts on dead bedroom, thoughts on non-monogamy and long-term desire?
Yeah, I think even to what you said, right? Like, you know, that it's when people don't do monogamy well, like, you know, but I don't know if I'm convinced that long-term monogamy works for, and I'm going to say an extreme statement, anyone without someone giving up something. And so I'm sure there are couples later in life that, you know, stay together, make it through all of those things. But I'm not convinced that at some point one of those people isn't in a position where they're not getting what they need from the relationship.
Oh.
Like, you know, if everyone always uses the example of their grandparents, right? People are like, oh, well, my grandparents stay together for their whole life. It's like, is that the measure of success? All right. And what do you know of their relationship? You know, I found out stuff about my grandparents' relationship that from the outside could have seemed great, wonderful, healthy, all of these things, but behind closed doors was not. So, you know, and so then you look at other people that are like maybe shorter term data sets, and it's like, what's the time frame that we're measuring success over? You know, yeah, I've got friends that have been in relationships for 5 years, 10 years, some even 15. You know, so is holding it together for that long success, or is it that we're shooting for 60 years together? And in that case, like, how are you going to handle the inevitable case that at some point one of you is going to have different wants and needs?
I just think like desire as a concept is not, you know, I guess, how do you even define desire? Is it a need? Is it an emotion? Is it just a really primal, like intuitive impulse? What is it and where does it come from? And I think, you know, the problem with monogamy, or the problem with the demand of getting everything, all of your needs, all of your desires met by one person, is that we have to funnel all of our desire into one small, tiny little hole. And so by doing that, by turning desire down to avoid feeling desire for other people, we have to turn everything down. I don't think you can just cut and chop up your desire to make sure that it only fits one person in your life. I think we can all agree that at a really basic level, it's like agreeing that you find people attractive outside of just your partner. Like that's a form of desire. And then flirting or enjoying being complimented by someone of the opposite sex, or, you know, the gender that you're attracted to. Like that's a form of desire. But I think we have to have like these almost fences around our desire so that we stay with one person. And if you go outside of the bounds, that's a threat to the relationship. And the problem with that is I think inevitably, if you turn down your desire so that you're only desiring one person, I think you run the risk of shutting down your desire completely. And then, like you said, therefore sacrificing potentially a really important part of who you are, of the things that you like to do and the things that you like to explore and the opportunities that you have. And this idea that, you know, love suddenly becomes quite limiting and quite limited when it doesn't have to be. It's totally infinite.
And I think that's like, you know, Esther in Maddie in Captivity talks about like that maintaining the fire in your relationship. And I suppose that, you know, in a simple way is desire that she's talking about that. So it's, I think as well, this is one of the things I've said about our relationship that almost has surprised me, or I just maybe a side of it that I didn't really think about as much, is by allowing in, you know, letting out that desire for other people and sort of, I suppose, not having to cage in your sexuality, not cage in sort of your wants and needs, I think it actually feeds into that fire that is in the relationship and the desire in the relationship. Because like, look, I'll speak like, you know, no one that I, you know, that I've kissed on, like, you know, I kiss you and it feels completely different. There's a completely different feeling about me and you kissing. And that's not to say other people are bad kissers, but it's like, there's an energy there that when I kiss you, it feels different. And so even if the purpose of seeing other people, almost like that's one of the things where it's like, oh, it's so nice to kiss, like, it reaffirms and almost in this very strange way that, like I said, I probably didn't think about that much, almost like reignites or at least brings your awareness to the fire that exists between you as a couple. And I think, you know, reading some of the dead bedrooms in Reddit and hearing some of those stories, I think people kind of almost forget that side of themselves as a couple, or they start to, you know, the fire dies down, they become roommates, and their sexual side disappears. And I think, you know, that's obviously a complex combination of factors, but so far with you, this is, you know, going on 4 years, I suppose, there hasn't been a single point that I felt like that has dropped away. I haven't had that for you, because I think in a lot of ways I have this like constant reminder of that existing.
And it's not that our sex hasn't changed and evolved.
It has, but
I think that the desire for it hasn't changed. And, you know, the whole like honeymoon phase concept, I'm like, that's kind of been obliterated. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's whatever you maintain. It's like, wherever you water the grass, in a sense. So I think what's interesting about dead bedrooms is that when you're in the dead bedroom Reddit, you have a lot of people that are like, I don't know what to do anymore. I, you know, am high libido. My partner is low libido. I really want more sex. They don't want more sex. There's many things that play into it where like the person that's wanting more sex feels like they just get rejected over and over again. And so they stop wanting to initiate. They don't know what they're doing wrong. They claim to be doing all the right things. But I think the interesting context that potentially you miss with a lot of these Reddits and a lot of these, you know, 50 word questions is, if somebody doesn't feel desire, is there something that's impacting that, that's not just about the desire for the other person? And so in a sense, you could potentially say like, hey, desire doesn't just get shut down. Desire is there, but there can be brakes on, right? Like we were talking about the Emily Nagoski brakes and accelerator, listening to the Multi-Amory podcast the other day. And it's like, you could have your like accelerator flat on the floor, like your foot is flat on the pedal. But if you've got a ton of brakes on, it doesn't matter what you do to accelerate, that person is just not going to get there. You have to also take the brakes off. And I think that's probably what's missing in the picture of these people that are talking about their dead bedrooms. It's like, well, who is responsible for the lion's share of the housework? Who is the person that is with the kids most of the time? Who is, you know, it's like, what is the sex like as well? Who's actually getting their rocks off in the bedroom? Like, is the sex satisfactory for both people, or is it actually more one-sided, whether it's intentional or not? And so I think that brings in a whole nother conversation where it's like, if we think of desire as a bit of a primal impulse, then it's the byproduct of your feelings towards someone. And so if there's underlying resentment, or if there's anger or frustration, I think that a decrease in desire or a decrease in libido might actually just be a reflection of an increase in resentment.
Yeah, and I think, like, I totally agree. And, like, trying to separate sex out, like, it's not connected to the rest of the things that exist in a relationship is where, like, when you see those dead bedroom things, like, I'm really bad at those, like, you know, here's a really simple question, like, what do you do about this? It's like, what else are you doing? Like, there was the story I was telling you from a podcast last week or whatever that was about the guy that was, like, just asked stupid questions all the time.
Yeah. You know,
to his wife, like these, like basic, like, you know, where does this thing go in the kitchen? And they've been living together for 5 years and he keeps asking where shit goes. It's like, she might be high libido, but just really sick of her husband's stupid fucking questions. And that drives her libido down. It's like, so, you know, almost boiling it down to like, she's high libido, I'm low libido, whatever the balance is. It's trying to separate that from what else are you doing in your relationship to foster connection, intimacy, and desire, and you know, therefore that then becomes the accelerator to someone either being low libido, medium, high libido, like whatever that looks like. I think that's what I hear in a lot of those things of like, oh, the sex has died down, I try and initiate, you know, and she doesn't respond or she knocks it back. It's like, what else are you doing before the point that you try and then, you know, you roll into bed at night? Like I've told you before, a mate of mine 10 years ago or something now came to me, you know, one of my friends that had been in like the longest relationship I'd known at the time. You know, they're still married. They've been together a really long time now. He came to me one day ready to break up their relationship. He came to me and told me that, you know, I think he was done. And one of the major reasons was around initiation of sex and not wanting sex. And I talked to this is way before I started to kind of think about relationship stuff, right? But, it, you know, he's like, oh, I roll into bed at night and, you know, I'll try and grab her or pull her close to me and she like slaps me away and pushes me out of the way and like doesn't want me. And I said to him, like, what else are you doing during the day? Like, are you helping her with shit? Like, you know, she's getting in bed going, oh, I'm tired. No, I'm not in the mood. It's like, if you start right then, at the minute you decide, okay, I'm horny now, I want sex. But for the rest of the afternoon after work, for the whole rest of the day, you haven't been physically connected. You haven't done anything to help take stress off her plate. All of those things. It's like, well, can you really expect any other outcome?
Mm.
You know, can you really expect that they're just going to go, okay, cool, I'll jump on you at a drop of a hat when there's been no connection, no intimacy, no care, no, you know, anything prior to that point? It's like, I would almost think like you should expect that you'll get pushed away in those cases, right? So it's like, what else are you doing outside of the bedroom that may be resulting in a dead bedroom or some form of, you know, a more dead bedroom than you wish to have? Yeah, what else are you doing? Or what else are you not doing?
I think there's such a big paradigm shift when you go through different seasons or different changes, I guess. And I think one of the big ones is moving in together. And it was something that I noticed with us. Like, you move in together and it removes the ability to go on dates. And no, I won't say it removes it, but it changes what's required to go on a date and create special time and space to be with each other. Because now being with each other is in abundance, whereas before it was scarce, right? You would have to organize to see someone. And then if you wanted to play with them or meet them and have sex, or you did want to like enjoy each other's physical intimacy or being physically intimate with each other, you would have to arrange that to happen as an outcome of spending time together, rather than just we've been together all day and just expecting it. I think like that can really change things. And then I'm sure, you know, having kids and having a family and those things will just layer on top of that, where the scarcity of it, like you said, the oxygen, it's just not there. You're in each other's presence. There is an abundance of being with each other to the point that it actually takes away from what's special about that. The mental load guy, which we've brought up a lot, and he's great. His name's Zachary Watson, and his Instagram is Real Zach Think Share. I don't know why that's his name, but he talks all the time about like mental load. And I would be cautious in following him because I think it would be very easy to watch his stuff and just be like, oh, well, so much mental load on me. And like, I am the victim and you're just not doing anything right. And I think you could totally turn this into a bit of a weapon, but still a very interesting concept. And it gives some nice I just vernacular or ability to verbalize some of the things that you might be frustrated with or dealing with and not be able to explain. But it is very much like, I would almost argue like counselor / therapist talk and jargon. So I would encourage, you know, you to try to understand it in your own context and put it into your own words. But it's a really, really nice way to see, and he talks about it like this, the invisible labor that different people do in their relationship and how that can impact the way that you feel about them. So I just wanted to share that in case anybody wants to follow him like I do, because I just find him really interesting.
I think the thing on the other side of that, right, because like even I just thought about like what I was just saying, like, you know, the pressure on the male in the relationship or, you know, one person in the relationship of like, oh, well, it's their job to like start the day thinking about, well, how do I make sure I foster connection and all of these things with my partner? It's on both people. And I think there is like, you know, a lot of relationships for whatever circumstance, right? There's, you know, and I think these two things feed into each other now that I think about it. It's like the guy that is the hopeless, bumbling guy that's, you know, that makes the partner almost have to like caretake for him all day, right? But I think there's also like, you know, and just, you know, female partners that then to their male partners almost like treat them as a child. And it's like in both of those cases, it's like if you're a male and your you know, partner, wife, girlfriend, whatever in this scenario, like starts the day, like, you know, berating you, telling you what to do all day. Like that's not really going to give the male like that, you know, desire to step up and kind of want to lead as well. So I think that there's a lot of relationships that are like almost stuck in that trap where from the start of the day, yeah, sure, the guy's not doing, maybe pulling his weight. The female's then, you know, piling onto him, making him feel less like a man, I suppose, you know, to use that. And it's like, so how, you know, they're kind of in a bit of a, just a toxic cycle of like, no, that isn't a particularly sexy environment for either people. So I think there's responsibility on both half. And I think, you know, even in what you're talking about Zach, like, I think that's a good opportunity to talk to your partner about like what those different kind of mental load things are or what things might be getting in the way of desire. You know, back to the fire analogy, you know, what things are taking oxygen out for you both. And that might be for the, you know, one person that's about mental load, for the other person that might be other behaviors that's also, you know, killing the fire as such.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of just like enablers out there almost, like women especially, who are like very good at being the mother, the mother hen. Like I think that's quite intrinsic in a lot of women. And it's easy to want to just take care of everything and to enjoy that. But inadvertently creating a partner who becomes to rely on that and make that really easy. Like I'm even feeling that with the house. Like Greg and I are renovating this house and you've jumped on it. Like you've jumped all over it to the point where I'm like, I'm trying to inject myself back in the process because I can feel it becoming this split in workload. And so I'm really pushing myself to like get into, to your dismay, much to your dismay, but I'm making sure that it isn't something that I can feel myself going, Greg's got it. Greg's handling it. It's fine. And then that becoming something that does frustrate you, or you feel like you can't ask me for help because I'm so outside of the process or so uninvolved that it's like, well, it's just more difficult to ask me at that point. And I think that the same thing happens in reverse, you know, to the point where let's say I'm constantly cleaning and doing the dishes or doing the cooking, which we don't, we're very much split on that. But if I were doing it, it would be easy for you to tap out of the process of thinking, do I need to organize something for dinner? What food's in the house? Should I get groceries on the way home? It's like, you're never outside of that process because you're totally participating in it. And I've never enabled you to go, well, Kate's probably already organized something. Or like, I think Kate went to the grocery store yesterday. I don't want to get double. I got double last time and we didn't, you know, whatever that process looks like. I think you end up enabling each other. And building on that, the way that people phrase like the divine feminine and the divine masculine and allowing your partner to step into their divine masculine, as much as I don't really connect with some of that language, I also believe that that is something that I value in our relationship, where, you know, I deliberately want to let and not let you. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but I want to step out of the way. Like, I want my ego and my like control and need for like having fingers on everything. Like, I want to move that out of the way so that you can be in charge. I want you to do that. Like, and I really like it when you do. And so for the woman that want a man that is more dominating, that takes control, like, how much are you actually getting in the way of that?
And I think like the house renovation thing is a good example, right? Because as much as, you know, I've talked about, yeah, look, it feels like I've got a lot of like mental load around all the things I have to do, all of those things. It's like, I think, like, I was talking to one of my friends last night, and like he basically said he feels exactly the same, right? As far as like his heaps of stuff he's got to do, but you know, it also feels good, right? And it's like, we want a project. We want to feel like, you know, we're not, look, I work behind a desk, you know, every single day of the week. And it's like, so it's kind of nice to feel when I can like go and build something, go and fix something. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm not a hopeless, just like little soft-handed desk worker. So like, it, you know, at the same time, it is nice to almost, you know, be able to feel capable, feel like I am, you know, contributing in that way. Like, there's all these stories of like grandparents and stuff that used to build their own houses. Like, I would love to be able to like build our house and then be able to step back and go, I built that for us, kind of thing, right? But I think that that is that balance between, like you say, you don't want to sort of, you know, me get to a point where I'm like, oh, okay, it doesn't help at all. It's like, but I also like it being like my project a little bit.
I'm the same with the house, like with like cleaning and sorting stuff. I'm like, it's enjoyable to look after you.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's exactly the point in that, right? Where there's almost this balance of like letting someone do those things that they gravitate towards. And I think then, you know, like I said to you before, like I think in the first few weeks when we moved in, like I was hammered and I sort of said, look, I'm happy to do this, but it's like that, as long as I know that, you know, my effort is appreciated and what I'm putting in, as long as it's noticed, it feels really good, right? Because it's like, if you're just working your ass off and like burying yourself in doing shit, and I'm sure it's the same with housework, it's like everyone wants to feel like they're contributing. But if you're doing all that and you feel like it's not seen or it's not noticed, then that's when it leads to resent. So I think, you know, that's probably the balance, right? And I think same thing again, like I think, you know, we discussed all that stuff around, like I said to you, look, I'm happy to do like the manual stuff, like the design stuff. I've got no interest in that. Like, that's not the part where I really care about. So it's like, I don't want to pick tiles. I couldn't care less. You know, what door handles do we use? I don't care, as long as they open the door, you know? So it's like, there's some basic stuff like that is like, and I think that we talked about those things of like, hey, I'll do this stuff. You tell me what door handles are going to go on and I'll put the door handles on. Like, I'm cool with that. So yeah, I think all of those things, and you could probably look at every sort of aspect of housework and domestic life in that way of like, okay, if someone's, you know, I think we've talked before as well about like men managing money, right? And being the one that's like all over the finances, making sure the bills are paid, doing all that stuff. It's like, same. It's like, it's something that I, not that I enjoy doing, but it's like, I'm happy to step in and go, okay, I'm going to make sure that like, I've got a spreadsheet in Google that I, you know, have everything split out. It's like, I know you don't look at it. It's all there that you could go look at it, but it's like, I kind of, it's easy for me to do that stuff. And it's like, so there are roles, I suppose, that we step into. And I think it's good to let everyone kind of gravitate towards what they are good at, what they want to do, as long as ultimately it feels balanced. And, you know, I suppose, yeah, like I said, it's not kind of not seen at all, and therefore there's resentment.
Okay, let me give you a little dead bedroom Reddit, a little bit of insight to the people that aren't on Reddit about what happens. By the way, dead bedroom, when I first started reading it, because it would come up a lot because I'd read most of the posts, it definitely like kind of messed with me for a while. So if you haven't read a lot of this stuff, like it fires me.
Kat used to stress out all the time. She's like, she'd like every couple of days, she's like, oh, but, you know, what about this? And what about this hypothetical scenario? I'm like, you've been reading Dead Bedrooms again, haven't you? Get off Reddit. It's like this like cesspool of the world.
It is. It's all but the worst.
I read it all the time as well. You just get like all of the worst of everything, of everyone going, oh my God, I'm in this shit fart of a situation. So it's like, you go read the polyamory or non-monogamy subreddit. It's like, there's not many people in there celebrating how fucking amazing their relationship is. It's all we tried this and now it's a dumpster fire. It's not really Google reviews or Yelp reviews
yeah. where people only review it if it's a 5 out of 5 or a 1 out of 5. You get a lot of
reviews. I give people threes.
Sorry?
I give people 2s and 3s. Yep, I want them to know when they're just mediocre.
So on this post, which is by Feisty-Lever3979, 9 hours ago, the title is, I'm confused on how we're ever supposed to move past this. My husband is low libido, or I don't really know, to be honest. He did test for low testosterone, which she hasn't posted what the results were. He jacks off 1 to 2 times a day and eats like shit. He doesn't work out. Last night, he was saying he feels less of a man, that he is anxious and scared to have sex. I'm sorry, but what am I supposed to do with that? After literally 5 years of me prying for sex and trying every avenue, what am I supposed to do? I'm almost positive he jacked off this morning downstairs. So how am I supposed to help him? He's sick. He refuses to change, obviously. I'm sorry, but why are, brackets, not all men, but most so addicted to porn? What is the appeal of watching another man fuck a woman when you literally have a woman in the next room that practically begs for sex? Discuss. Mm.
Yeah, especially if the guy's like getting himself off a couple of times a day, but then not going near his wife, like that's a problem, right? Like it's like you've got either and especially if she's tried talking to him about it, all of those things, it's like, at some point, you almost have to put an ultimatum on someone on that, right? To go, hey, you're doing this. I'm not getting my needs met. Either you have to start meeting my needs or like, and I obviously bias towards non-monogamy, right? Where it's like, look, if your choice sexually is that how you get your needs met is masturbation and porn, fine. This is how I'm going to go get my needs met if you can't meet them. Like, you know, so I think at some point, like that situation, 5 years of trying, like, at some point you've got to go, do I want to do this for the next 5, 10, 30 years? And it's probably not going to get better. Like I talked to a friend of mine, a couple of years ago now in a sort of not the same situation, but there wasn't that spark and wasn't a whole lot of sexual energy. And kind of, they were 5 years in or something. And I said to them, I'm like, look, this isn't going to get better in 10 years time. So it's like, it's almost that the start is going to be the best, you know, the most fire that exists in your relationship. So if you're not feeling like that's ever existed, like what are you trying to get back to? So yeah, I think in that case, that would probably be my, you know, first simple cut of advice, I suppose, is to say like, be more blunt with what your needs are and kind of let them know like, hey, I need you to meet these. Like, you know, if he's going to get testosterone test and all of those things, like he's obviously not doing nothing, and there's some the comment at the start about he feels like less of a man, like there's obviously something going on there where either he has performance anxiety, something that he's feeling nervous, unsure, you know, maybe he can't get it up and has some ED issues. Like that's maybe the other bit that I pick up on is like, what's that comment at the start about around saying, well, he feels like less of a man and like he can't, I forget exactly the words of like, can't perform, can't, you know, do whatever it is. So there's obviously something more behind that. And, you know, if you said something like that to me as an example, I would be super curious in like, okay, well, what is that? What's going on for you? What's happening in your brain? You know, is that what is, you know, is the leaning towards porn, kind of almost like covering for that? Because, you know, is it that he can't get it up when he's having sex because he gets really in his head, but then for, you know, with porn, when there isn't the pressure of, you know, someone next to you in the bed expecting something from you, or whatever that looks like, that's when you struggle with it. So I think that that can be like, porn can be an escape for a lot of people. And to the comment of like, why do all men have such a problem with porn? I think it's escapism, and you know, they're watching other people have sex, so there isn't any expectation on them to perform, and therefore then they have no issue getting hard, they have no issue coming, you know, no condoms, like whatever those issues are. But yeah, absolutely. I think also no doubt on the porn thing, that it has skewed people's expectations with sex as well. So
it's such a fast track out of your head, right? Like You're watching something that's visually stimulating. You can be totally immersed in some other setting, scenario, place, person, where you don't have to do anything, but you're in that world. It's the same thing as watching a movie or a TV. Like, you can just become immersed in that, and all of the thoughts and the worries and the insecurities and anything that is on loop in your brain is totally forgotten about for that period of time. It's just, it takes your full attention. And so as soon as you get back into a room where you're thinking again, it's like, I think you nailed it. He said, I feel less of a man. I'm anxious and scared to have sex. Like, you know, if you just pulled that part out, it's like, I think there's some like heavy psychological stuff that's probably popping up that's preventing him from enjoying the sex that he, and I don't know if he wants it, you know, maybe there is a conversation there where it's like, he doesn't want it with her, or there's other issues, right? There's always context. But I think just looking at that line, it's like, there's something else going on. And I think, like you said, there probably, if it's been 5 years, then there's probably an ultimatum that's well overdue, or some kind of consequences. Like, hey, I have a boundary, and it's that I have to have XYZ. And if you don't meet it, then the consequences are, I'm not going to be in this relationship, or I'm going to seek somebody else to meet those needs. And I think that's where the conversation, like, you know, we're kind of at the extreme end where it's like, someone's 5 years deep, they're not getting sick, someone feels super rejected, someone feels super anxious, and it's like that compatibility in the bedroom is not there. They might be compatible in every other way. And I read a lot of posts that are that, where it's like, everything's great, but we don't have sex. And that's the only thing that like crushes me. I love this person. I have children with this person. I don't want to take, you know, break my life apart because of sex, but it is like destroying me inside. And so at that point, do you go, okay, do you maintain the relationship by cheating and just not telling the person? Like, at what point do you go, I know the way that I can keep this relationship going and make myself feel like a person, feel physical touch and affection and desirability towards someone and you know, receiving it. At what point do you cheat?
Dan Savage talks about that, like, the price of admission thing, where it's like, look, if you really want to stay in the relationship, you've tried to talk to them about it, you know, they're not receptive, they can't change. You know, he kind of talks about that, of like, look, go and, you know, if that's what you need to do and you're committed to making the relationship work, if you've got kids or whatever the scenario is, and it's like, that is the only thing that's not working about it, almost like, you know, giving his listeners permission in that way, to go, well, go get your needs met, like, go do the thing. But, you know, that's, I think, you know, I wouldn't say like that should definitely not be the first resort. And it's like, you know, try and talk through it, try and work it out with your partner. But I think this is where like people not talking about sex until it's an issue is an issue. And not waiting until like then you're going, hey, we haven't had sex in 2 years kind of thing. Can we talk about it? Like, if you're not talking about sex regularly, like, that could be a lot of the pressure that this guy in that scenario is like, there's a lot of expectation on him of like getting harder as soon as his wife wants him. And yes, there's obviously this, like, he's getting off twice a day that might not be helping that. But yeah, it sounds like they've got a lot of other issues, probably more communication issues than the sex issue. And that's what I was saying before about, I suppose, trying to separate, like, people look at the sex thing in isolation to be like, well, he's low libido and this is going on. It's like, but what else are you doing? Are you having proactive conversations about what your needs are, about sex, about like, hey, like, I've noticed that you're, you know, getting yourself off a couple of times a day, but we're not being intimate. Like, what is it that's drawing you to that? Not being like accusatory, but be curious and be like, hey, like, tell me what it is that you're getting from porn that, you know, is that fulfilling? What need is that fulfilling for you? Particularly in light of that we're not having sex. Like, I think that a lot of people, you know, maybe go into those conversations where they're like, oh, you like, you know, going off at their partner about watching porn and yelling at them and telling them not to watch porn again, you know, and actually blocking out the important and really valuable conversations, ultimately, to actually just understand them better and understand what's going on in their brain.
Yeah, I think that as much as, you know, I might bring up a million hypothetical scenarios and ask you all these weird, bizarre, curious Reddit-inspired questions, I think we are so proactive in talking about sex that really I'm just looking for an excuse to talk to you about sex because I like it so much. It's such an interesting, intriguing topic that I love to know more about. And, you know, just it's really fun to be with someone who you can talk about all those like dirty, gross secrets that humans have that no one talks about. You know, it's like it's a little indulgence. Like I love talking about sex. And I think that exactly what you said is people that are, even the fact that they're posting it on Reddit instead of talking to their partner about it, it's like that highlights the issue right there. The only talking about sex in response to the sex thing not working. And it's like, if that's the context that you have those conversations, and no wonder it's not working, because one, it's so hard to talk about that. If someone's giving you critical feedback, if someone is getting defensive, if someone is trying to make a change because they're not satisfied, like that is the hardest conversation to have when it comes to sex. So if that's the only conversation you're having and it's happening years down the line, good luck. Like, man, good luck, because that is tough. Like you and I even have had conversations when it comes to direct specific feedback or criticism. Like it's so easy to get defensive or get, you know, go around in circles or feel upset about it and feel personally attacked. Like it just turns into that so quickly. So if you're not having, it's the same, like it's the negativity positivity bias, in the same way that you should be complimenting your partner more than you're critiquing them out loud. And if you're not, the balance is off. It's skewed. In terms of having the sex conversation, you should be having more proactive, positive, interesting, curious conversations about the sex that you're having or sex as a topic in general than you are about the negative conversations. And I'm sure that there's like, you know, a huge number of people, even, you know, me in previous relationships, the number of conversations about sex were minuscule, and them being positive didn't happen. It was only in reaction to the sex that we were having that I wanted to change.
And particularly if your partner's expressing the stuff that the guy in that post did around, you know, obviously mental, psychological blockers that are getting in the way, right? It's like, pump him up, tell him, like, not just like nagging. And that's what I was saying before about this kind of the parentifying and kind of the two people in this. It's like, look, realize that maybe what you need to do is actually like pump their tires up a little bit and focus less on what you don't want them to do, and don't watch porn, don't get yourself off twice a day, but talk about like what you want them to do. Be like, hey, I fucking love when you do that thing. Like, I want more of this from you. Tell them what you want more of, and make them feel, particularly in this case, like he's like got mental blockers. It's like, help him get around those, and you know, and that will ultimately lead to the thing you want more of. Maybe if it doesn't, obviously ultimatum, have the conversation. But yeah, I think that in that scenario, and I'll make assumptions about this person, is like, by just focusing on like, oh, that you're watching porn, you're doing this, you're doing that, you know, and that being the issue, think about what you could give them and what you could tell them that might lead them to actually wanting more, desiring more, feeling like, you know, more sexy, like whatever those things are. I think there's a lot that the other partner in that situation could do, in no different to what I said before about like the typical like male wanting more sex from the wife situation. It's actually less about what sex you are and more about, well, are you the one that's, you know, is higher libido? If you're the higher libido one and your partner is lower libido, like then you need to figure out what their accelerators are, figure out what brakes might be on for them, and see how you can help with those things.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, I think what she highlighted was he eats like shit and he doesn't move his body. Like he's not taking care of his health. And so I think that there probably are many scenarios where people aren't actually helping themselves and are expecting sex drive and libido to be this like really natural response, which it makes sense because at the beginning of a relationship, it probably was like that. But to, like we spoke about, to funnel your desire down to one person and expect your desire not to lower in overall, I just don't think it's a reality. And so I think it's really easy for your desire to just be squashed. And I think for, you know, a lot of women and men, it's like the health and moving and seeing other people, it's like that helps you feel good and breathe a little bit of air into the relationship. And, you know, building on that, it's like, I think porn is, you know, one expression of desire. And I think it can be used in a healthy manner as well as an unhealthy way. So I think that maybe it's like exploring what type of porn or the source of the porn, or even like the way that you're playing with yourself. Like for women, if you're only ever using vibrators, or for men, if you're only ever using a death grip when you're jerking yourself off, it's like there are probably changes that you could implement to help you not associate getting off with that one way to do it. There are so many different ways that you can get yourself off, but you will adapt to the way that you use the most. And so having some variety in there. But then it's like, you know, you can, I think I have had conversations with women who are low libido, and I'm like, do you ever shop for lingerie? Like, do you ever do that? And it's like, well, no, I don't feel confident in my body. And it's like, okay, well, you how do you get confident in your body? Like, let's go to the gym, let's train, like, let's be around. And I think even some of the non-monogamy stuff plays into this as well. And again, like we keep on biasing it towards the non-monogamy conversation, but it's like being complimented by someone else outside of your relationship is so powerful. And like, I know that you've spoken about that. It is an ego boost that you didn't realize that you needed or would get. But when it's from your partner, there's something that's, you know, is inherently biased. And so it's like, you kind of know that, well, they, you know, they believe that, that's why they're with you. But to hear it from someone else and to be complimented by someone else is like, it's really nice. And so sometimes, but, you know,
everyone in a relationship, right? Your partner gives you a compliment, and I'm guaranteeing everyone has said it. Oh, you have to say that, right? It's like, oh, you have to say that because you're my boyfriend. Oh, you have to say that because you're my girlfriend. It's like when you meet people and they compliment you when it isn't their quote unquote job to do that, and you know, it only then I think reaffirms when then the next time your partner says, you know what, I think this about you, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I've heard that in other places lately. It makes you realize like, oh, maybe they're not just saying it because it's their job, maybe they're saying it because they actually mean it. So I think like it does, you know, almost reaffirm and reflect back into the relationship, you know, oh, okay, yeah, you're not just saying it because you have to. You've heard it in multiple places from people that are, you know, sexually attracted to you. And it, you know, yeah, it does make you feel good. I think back to what, like the fitness thing as well. Like we've talked about this really early on, I think on early episode, but around just like shared values in a relationship. And it's like in that case, look, and this is what it's super hard about like a, you know, 50 word Reddit post kind of thing. It's like, but they've been married, they live together, they do all those things. It's like, but their partner's eating really unhealthy and they're not moving. It's like, if one partner does eat healthy and they are moving and the other person is consciously choosing not to participate in those things, are your values actually aligned as a couple? Because for you and me, you know, that's one of the things that we love training together, love cooking together. You know, we enjoy those things. I think we have shared values around health and, you know, longevity in life and all of those things. If all of a sudden you started to just eat like shit and not, you know, move your body, and or if I did the same, I would totally expect you to call me out and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, you've been eating McDonald's for the last, you know, 3 weeks. Something's really wrong. Intervene on day two, please.
Never seen Greg eat McDonald's.
But yeah, like I think that's another part of the like communicate and have that conversation, right? Because yeah, like it's like if you're opposites on those things, it's like, do you actually want the same things out of life? And are your values in life misaligned and you need to then have a conversation about realigning them to say, hey, this is one of the things that we used to do together or we agreed we would do. So not just about the sex side of things again, right? It's like, you know, what's the fundamentals of the relationship that then sex is almost then, you know, the layers that get put on top of that. So I think that's probably some other stuff that, you know, if it was a friend of mine I was talking to, I'd say explore some of that as well, because yeah, if you're looking at your partner and going, okay, they're eating less shit, they're not moving, they're not doing this, they're watching porn twice a day. Like, there's so many things in this story that I could almost say, like, they seem misaligned in what they want.
Yeah, and I think going outside of just the fitness and health thing, even the fact that they've got something that's challenging them deeply in terms of their, you know, sense of self, their confidence, their anxiety. And I think, you know, operating out of that place can be hard because you can be kind of saturated in it, and operating in a really emotional place, we probably can't make a lot of decisions. But I think after a period of time of having a partner wanting something and trying to create something and build more sex, and then you going, no, I'm too anxious, I'm too scared, I don't feel like a man, but then not doing something about it, I think that that is a mismatch of values as well. If you have someone that you're with that coming up against a challenge, as personal and as difficult as it may be, that isn't going like, fuck it, I'm going headlong into this, I'm going to figure this shit out, like proactively doing something about it. Like, and I know, you know, you and I have done that, and I've certainly felt scared to do some of those things, but it's been really good to do it. And I would put that value above my feelings and my fear. You know, it's like virtue over happiness. And that's a really important piece of what aligns with us. It's like we have values that we're aware of, that we speak about and we believe in, that, you know, we've found on our own, that we've then fostered together. That if something came up that was a problem with sex or desire or the relationship, then the value of overcoming a challenge and doing hard shit because that's what makes us better would be what would push and accelerate me through that. And so I think hearing about someone with a partner who's not like that, regardless of the subject, regardless of whether it's sex or if it's housework or if it's a renovation, it's like if there's a challenge and you are not at all interested in discussing it, finding ways to deal with it and like overcoming it, whether you do it as a couple or on your own, like that is a huge, like that's a, you know, the phrase, like that's an ick. That gives me the hard ick.
Like not even like that for me is almost like what excites me the most about a relationship is having someone to actually have, like to have those conversations with and to grow with in that way. Like, it's almost probably one of the not the most important thing, but it is one of the things that, you know, excited me the most about meeting you and excites me the most about our relationship is the conversations we have and being able to kind of, you know, get into these, like, you know, just deep, you know, hey, you know, whatever, like kind of situations. But yeah, I just, you know, the fact that in some of these relationships, like not only do they not have that, but it's like it's just not part of their relationship. Like, what do you do together? Like, what is your relationship if it doesn't consist of having conversations and learning and understanding each other better? Like, are you just sitting around watching fucking TV all the time? Like, I don't know, it blows me away a little bit. Or, you know, I've been in relationships like that, so I do get it, but there is so much better out there if that's the situation you're in, where you're just not having any kind of deep conversations with your partner about who they are, what they want, where you're going in life together, like all those things. Like, that's what excites me. So
yeah, and I think that it highlights the need for harder conversations early, like early in the relationship. It's a test. Like, see how someone reacts when you talk about sex or you talk about something that is really challenging for yourself or for them. Like, it should be a filtering process of like bringing it up and letting them filter themselves out because they expose themselves real quick because they are defensive or they don't want to talk about it. Or, you know, it's like it makes it pretty clear who the people are that you're going to be able to have those conversations with.
For sure. Yeah, I say that to people all the time. Are you going to post this under that person's Reddit post and be like, hey, we just talked about you for an hour?
I think the answer was
shit about your relationship. Go and read, go and listen to
this. Get out or get clear on what you're going to do, like to take care of yourself if they're not going to help take care of the relationship. All right.
Yeah.
That's another episode of Gone Rogue. Thanks, team.
Thanks. Bye.